But first, FameLab is an international science communication competition where contestants take to the stage and talk to the public about science. During the last month or so, heats have been held in cities across the UK, and we've been hearing from the finalists here in Cambridgeshire recently. This region's champion has now been announced, and he's set to compete with other regional winners next month for the chance to go head-to-head with scientists from across the world in June. And he is with us now. It's Max Gray. Hi, Max.
Hello.
So how does it feel to be in the finals?
It feels great, actually. I'm slightly surprised still, but no, it feels fantastic.
Now, your winning talk was about Nemo, the clownfish. Is this what you actually work on as a researcher?
No, it's not. I do work on the behaviour of fish on coral reefs, but not on clownfish. I actually work on cleaner wrasse, which are fish that you find throughout the Pacific.
Well, let's hear your prize-winning stuff. So if you could give us your 3 minutes about Nemo.
Yes, of course. So usually when I introduce myself to new people, what I tell people is that I'm a marine biologist. What I do is I study the behaviour of fish in coral reef communities, and their reaction at that point is usually, something like Finding Nemo, which it's not quite. But regardless, that film isn't actually a bad portrayal of what a reef ecosystem looks like. And what people often follow this up with is a question like, how accurate is the film? And moreover, did the inaccuracies annoy me? Which is ridiculous. It would be like asking any other zoologist whether the inaccuracies in The Lion King would annoy them, as if anybody was going to go to the savannah and expect to see an immaculately choreographed dance routine performed by giraffes and zebras. So no, it doesn't annoy me. That being said, what I am going to talk about is exactly that, those inaccuracies in Finding Nemo, and why it would be a very different film indeed if it were biologically accurate. The reasons this is the case is because two very interesting details of how clownfish and anemone fish in general behave. First off is something called sequential hermaphroditism, which is where the fish start off, broadly speaking, sexless or ungendered, if you will. And then as they grow and they become the second most dominant individual in their little anemone society, they become male and they develop testes. And as they progress and they take over as the biggest, most dominant individual in that society, they change sex to become female. So, if you remember the film in Finding Nemo, at the beginning of the film, you have a breeding pair of clownfish. And they're happy, they've just created a nice large brood of eggs together. And unfortunately, what happens next is that the female, the mother fish, gets eaten by a barracuda. So far, so accurate. That does happen. However, what would have happened next would be that her death would have triggered Nemo's father to undergo a sex change and become a new mother, which would have made for an interesting film, although possibly more of an art house than a blockbuster flick. Now, the second thing that's very interesting about these fish is something called filial cannibalism. And this is the process by which fish, or any animal in fact, will eat their offspring if something goes wrong and they find themselves in a disadvantaged situation. And in the case of clownfish, new parents, which they are in the film, are even more likely to do this. They do this with alarming regularity. So what's really likely to have happened in a sort of Finding Nemo situation is that the mother fish will have died. The father slash now mother fish will have eaten all of the eggs, including Nemo, which would have produced a very different film indeed with a cannibalistic transsexual parent.
Max Gray, and what we didn't know about the real life Nemo.